Hey, this is Rob Motti. Thank you for listening to Faith on a Field Show. Please make sure to subscribe to the show, rate, review, and share. This episode is brought to you by Heritage's Dairy Stores. Welcome to Faith on a Field Show, presented by Karen University. Rob Motti, Pastor Kyle Horner, Doug Horton, and Remy. I am back from Atlanta, and I'm bringing one of my Radio Row guests with me. Thrilled to have Pro Football Hall of Famer, Philadelphia Eagles legend, Brian Dawkins, talk about his relationship with the Lord on this episode. It was an awesome week at the Super Bowl. It was a lot better than the game itself, guys.
No doubt. That's not really that hard, bro. That game,
yeah. We didn't actually give out our predictions on the game last episode. No. I gave mine out on the shows that I did down there, and I had 34-30, so I was off by about 48 points.
Yeah, I predicted the Patriots 13-3, so that was my
I had 35 total points at halftime, so I wasn't even close. Yeah,
but how interesting is this? So I'm there. We're all watching the game, and it really makes Nick Foles' value even grow higher. Yeah.
Absolutely,
because you look at this and you go, Nick Foles dropped 41 on Bill Belichick,
yes,
and Sean McVay, the genius that Sean McVay is, and Jared Goff, who's supposed to be the next great quarterback, mm-hmm, they managed a field goal.
8 punts in a row.
It was
so bad. Look, here's what I know. I love good football. I love good defense as well. I thought there were some phenomenal defensive plays out there, but I also thought there was some really bad quarterbacking. So on both sides, I mean, I don't think Brady looked good at all, except for the last 10
last
minutes,
ride,
which he always is fantastic. Goff looked like he really didn't have a clue.
He looked scared.
He really did. He looked completely confused all the way around.
No running game at all.
And I don't think anyone can figure out where Gurley disappeared to, because there's been no answers.
It's mind-blowing. And he handled every question afterwards.
Professional.
I was standing there. I went to both teams post-game, and I'm listening to Todd Gurley, and he's talking like, did you want to get it? And, hey, this is the way it was going to be. And I know C.J. Anderson came on for them towards the end of the year and had some really good games. But you have a weapon in Todd Gurley, and you're not using him unless he's hurt. It just defies logic, and all the weapons that you got, Brandon Cooks, you got Robert Woods, you got all these, and I think it ends the argument of Carson Wentz going at number 2, Jared Goff going at number 1. Which quarterback would you rather have? There were people debating, hey, would you take McVay and Goff now over Peterson and Wentz? Hey, Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl already with a backup quarterback against the same New England Patriots, Bill Belichick, and everyone else, and dropped 41 on him.
It wasn't even just a backup quarterback. It was a backup team. I mean, half of the starting lineup, right? I mean, when
captains,
you really get down to
else.
It.
Yeah.
I mean, the Rams went into this outside of Kupp really being hurt, right?
Yeah.
Cooper
very
Kupp being
healthy.
Hurt. Very healthy. Almost their entire starting team with the possible MVP in Todd Gurley. Could have controlled the ball the entire game with a running game and play action. And for whatever reason, went away from that game plan early on. And I think the Rams gave away a very winnable game.
I think it just lacked creativity for what you've seen all year with the Rams and trying to go for it. And
the aggressiveness
wasn't there.
Which is
not
weird
there.
For McVay, right? I mean,
there were a couple opportunities where I'm looking going, okay, maybe here he goes on fourth down. Maybe here he tries that fake punt.
Yep.
That's all. Then I know that they're ready for the fake punt. But the difference in this Super Bowl and Doug Peterson was aggressive. He maintained who he
is
all along. And Sean McVay goes into this and Sean McVay changes the way he coaches. And some people go, oh, it was a great defensive struggle. There was some great
there
defensive
was some fantastic
plays.
Defensive
but
plays.
Like you said earlier, there were illegal motion penalties that you shouldn't have in a Super Bowl.
Yep.
There were passes that were just thrown off both sides. Tom Brady's first pass that fluttered out there for an interception
was
terrible. He got away with another one that was bad.
He knew. It's interesting when you watch that pass as a quarterback. He knew when he went to throw it, he shouldn't have thrown it. So that's actually why the ball comes out the way that it comes out, because you're trying to hold on to it. Because you see, you're seeing it late.
You're
trying to pull
it
back. No. And it's just,
See, Kyle gives you that unique perspective.
It's just the way that it works.
Kyle was an actual quarterback. I was only a post-game quarterback.
I saw you throwing the ball out there. It looked good. The form was all right.
It's hard in a suit, man.
Impossible in a suit. Goff missing Brandon Cooks. in a wide open, you know, end zone.
How did he get so wide open in the fourth quarter?
I understand jitters early on, no doubt. I mean, you're 23, big, big game. And Belichick can confuse you, no doubt. But to be honest, they weren't doing anything probably that the Rams hadn't seen for the majority of time.
They were out executed. It was completely out executed. Yep. You know what this does for me? I don't look at the Rams, and a lot of people go, oh, okay, the Rams will be back next year. One, it's very hard to lose a Super Bowl and get back to it. The Patriots lost the Super Bowl, came back to it. No one had done that and won since the Dolphins in the 70s. Yes. We know the Bills kept losing one after another after another. But to get back and win. So I'm discounting the Rams going into next season. It's just it's another step ahead for the Eagles and the Saints and anyone else and the Cowboys.
Well, you know, when you look at last year's Super Bowl, it was a shootout.
Both teams played
great games. You know, I did watch the mic'd up version before the Super Bowl just to enjoy the Eagles being Super Bowl champions.
It's
for a couple more minutes.
That's fantastic.
We did put that on the TV. But there's a lot of missed field goals in that, the extra points and the field goals that were in that game too. But you know, for Tom Brady throwing over 500 yards, I think the Rams losing this game coming back, it's more frustrating, right? It wasn't like we were right there, even though the game was very close. It's going to be hard to rebound because there's a lot more criticism that's going to come.
It was a winnable game for them that they did not win. That was their opportunity to win a Super Bowl. They got to do a lot of soul searching and go back to, hey, how did we get here and what do we have to do? But let's get into real talk because
come on,
we could talk football all day long.
Yeah,
we're gonna get into real
talk.
We got B Doc. Our theme this episode is In My Feelings.
Yes.
In my feelings, I had to whip out the Urban Dictionary to make sure I was not going to get this wrong. So I got this right, and we're gonna get real and talk about our emotions. And Remy can give us the women's perspective, but from a man's point of view, there's like a major misconception that showing your emotions and being vulnerable isn't a manly thing to do. We're taught from a young age to suck it up, to be tough, to be strong, to man up. We talk about manning up all the time. And that creates this mentality that makes men feel less than if they're emotional. And sometimes men feel inferior if they show a sensitive side. And it makes men feel less macho if they want to talk about their feelings. And that's a major problem that we have to continue to overcome. And B-Dawg talks about this because it can lead men to suppress their feelings and bottling up those feelings. And what happens is when you don't have an outlet to release that pain, it becomes dangerous. And we can't continue to promote this fake macho image of how the world thinks men should act. And we really have to let guys know that you are not less than if you are emotional. You are not less than if you show your sensitive side. You are not less than if you seek professional help. Mm. And we could turn to the Bible and look at the shortest verse in there, John 11:35. It says, then Jesus wept. Jesus was emotional. He was sensitive. He cried out for his father.
Yes.
He was not afraid to show his feelings. And you could talk about men all you want. If there's one man that I ever want to try and emulate, and I do, and I fail every day, but I hope to continue to walk in his path, it's Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful verse, right? It's amazing that John puts it in there because it would have been easy for him to leave it out. You know, it's trying to show Jesus as this divine Son of God. And yet what we see in it is Jesus's real connection to his humanity in the midst of losing one of his best friends, even though he knows in just a few moments his best friend's going to live again. It's this incredible moment of really being a real human being. And I think, Rob, what you just said is so true. I think as a man, many times we believe that when we engage in emotion, we are less of a man. Right. But it's actually reverse. God gave us emotions. You know, God is the fruit of the Spirit. Our whole states of emotion, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, all those things are states of emotion. In the presence of God, there's fullness of joy. Jesus is the Prince of Peace, right? So the problem is not emotion. We actually are less human and less of godly men when we don't engage in emotion than when we actually try to contain it and restrain it. The issue is not whether or not we engage in emotion. Emotions are great servants. They're just horrible masters. And that's where we struggle many times is we allow emotion to dictate our lifestyle. And I think we've probably talked on the show before. Our emotions are always real. They're just not always truth.
Right.
I feel lonely. Yeah. I feel alone a lot. But the Bible says, right, my God will never leave me. He'll never forsake me. And I feel guilty. Yeah. I feel condemned. But the Bible says when you're in Christ, there's no condemnation. So my feelings are always there. Ecclesiastes 3, right, says there's a time to mourn and a time to laugh. There are these times for us to engage in emotion. Yeah. That actually is what connects us as human beings. And it enables us to be compassionate and empathetic and merciful and grace-filled in those moments and loving and kind. It's just that we can't allow our emotions to dictate, to be the master. We have to allow them to serve us. And that's the struggle for most people.
Thank you for taking exactly what I wanted to say.
Lead right in there for you.
We had that conversation.
Pastor. Yeah,
we had that conversation in the car, though, about you were talking about governing your feelings.
Yes. So basically, as women, I'm just being a representation of women here today, but we are so in our feelings. We are too much in our feelings.
A little bit more than we are, guys.
Sometimes an emotional mess. And that is true. I mean, sometimes I wake up and I'm like, okay, what is happening? I'm an emotional mess. But the thing is, I feel that expressing emotions is okay. But to let your emotions govern your decisions, that's the problem.
Absolutely.
So if I wake up and I have a problem with my husband or I have a problem with a friend and I let my emotions govern my decision of how I'm going to deal with that relationship, that is a problem. And a lot of women fall short when it comes to who they share their decisions with, who they share their feelings with. So I have this rule in my life that I always just live by. I don't really tell my emotions and feelings to a whole lot of people. It's actually only maybe one or two people, but mainly God. I run to God first. I do not share my emotions with friends. I do not share my emotions with anybody that just would agree with me. To me, that's a danger zone. If I go to a friend and I know for a fact that friend is going to just agree with me and not smack me upside the head and tell me, hey, snap out of it, that is a danger zone for me. I do not do that. That's one thing I always do. I always say I know a lot about my friends, but my friends don't know a lot about me. But it's true. I play the therapist with my friends. I'm the one that smack them upside the head and be like, snap out of it. That is not true. But I always go one to God or two to someone that would understand and just tell me, hey, this is what the Bible says about this, or this is the truth. So don't let your feelings govern your decisions. Another thing I wanted to share, if you need to understand that if you are entangled in your feelings and if you have a serious problem, as if you have a, you know, let's say anxiety or depression or something like that, you need to seek actual help. You need to seek professional help. There's nothing wrong with that. And in my opinion, if you want to seek help, it needs to be Christian counseling, because they will give you godly, sound advice that would actually make an impression on you and make an everlasting change. That's just my
there's a couple points I want to touch on, and that's good. Yeah. One is the idea of the women or you're saying you don't want to go to someone who's going to kind of agree with you. I don't know. Like in a case of men, we're more apt to go to someone who like can disagree or tell you, speak truth to you.
Yeah.
Speak truth to you. I think maybe women are more likely to be like, yeah, you're right, and this is awful, and it shouldn't happen, and so want to be so supportive.
That's the problem.
That they may not speak truth into you.
Yeah.
But I think what's important, as you're trying to say for women, is like find someone who will set you straight, who will tell you, no, you know what, you may be wrong here, or what you think is a relationship problem, that is not actually, it's you, it's not the other one. I think men may, we may do this too. We may have a tendency to want to feel like, hey, I want to be validated, or I want to go to someone who's going
to
be like,
human nature wants to be validated.
Right? You're going to go to somebody who's going to just be like, yeah, man. But I find it easier to find someone who is going to try and say, or try and speak to me and be like, nah, I think, man, you're wrong here. You're not right in this.
But Rob,
case.
I think we're only willing to do that if we're actually willing to change. And I think you know we should never share a problem with someone who is incapable of solving it. And that's, you know, what we end up doing is we share our problems.
It's a danger all zone. Around.
It's
yeah.
absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, so I think a lot of times we're talking about connection points. So what Remy was saying is true. Many times, generically, women relate. They're very relational creatures. So mm-hmm. they relate together emotionally. So they share emotion and relate emotion. So there's mm-hmm. that. That's where the connection point is. Guys connect with wanting to build something, want to do something, want to create something. Men are creators.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if Rob were willing to say, I see something as broken and want it fixed, mm-hmm. then we're willing to share it with someone as right. a man. Mm-hmm. But when we don't think that something that we think, feel, or do is wrong, we're not willing to share it because we don't actually think anything is being...
That's strong.
Is fixed. Yeah. And that's because we're connecting on the wrong things. And I love what Remy said earlier, and it's probably the thing that I would get back to on everything. I want to connect to people. My main connection with them needs to be on the truth of the Word of God. Mm-hmm. It's not even out of our, yeah. You know, our past. You know, these are my boys. This is who I grew up with. These are my friends. Yeah. That's great. That's a great a relational moment. Yeah. But that's not how I'm building my life. And so that's how we have to look at that. Who am I willing to share this with? Are these people able to solve the problem
yeah.
that I'm facing at the moment?
Yeah, I think sometimes we turn to other outlets because we feel they're safe, mm-hmm. Whether it's social media, yeah. which is dangerous because mm-hmm. people are going to get on there and give you a whole lot of different situations. But, you know, Kyle, we talked about this last week, and you were able to come in to talk to some young people and challenge them in the way of who's speaking into your life.
Absolutely.
And I think as men, we go through, we get to work, and we come home, and we get trapped in this circle of these relationships that aren't we can't build a foundation on. They're work relationships. They're superficial. They're the crowd. There are other people that are out there that don't speak in, that we don't get real with. And so I guess that's the challenge, even as you challenged young people last week, to find somebody in your life that can speak into truth into your life, that can challenge you, that you can be vulnerable with. And I think men and women all do that differently. Sometimes it's around a softball game, or it's around a sporting event, or
absolutely.
It's around talking about work, similar things that you share in common.
Yeah, we talk all the time about the levels of influence of relationship. So, you know, Jesus had his three. He had Peter, James, and John, who he brought into the most intimate moments of his life, shared his life with. They shared their life with him. He had his 12, the people who he was really speaking into their lives, but they weren't really speaking into Jesus' life. He had his 72, the other disciples, who were associates of him. They were in and out of his life at different times. Mm-hmm. They were still interested, but he was investing into them. They weren't investing into him. And then he had the crowd. And he didn't take somebody from the crowd and bring them up to the Mount of Transfiguration with them and go, here's who I really am. Oh, right? Because they would have been freaked out. Right. Even the people closest to him, when he really revealed his deepest self, were freaked out. I think Rob, the issue is for many times, men like to be in the crowd because we can be lost in it. And we're scared of the three. Women want to be in the three, but speak like they're in the crowd. Both sides are broken. It's because it's not right or wrong either way. Mm-hmm. What's right is to be able to look back and say, who are these three people? And it doesn't need to be three. We understand what I'm talking about. Yeah. That's this thing. Yeah. Who are the people that I'm sharing my life with? Because iron does sharpen iron. We've talked about that on the show 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Who are the people that I'm discipling, the 12? Who am I really investing into? Who are the associates in my life who I can go to the movies with, dinner with, that are safe, that are good, like, that I don't have to worry are going to, you know.
Yeah.
Too much
right, exactly. Bring judgment or guilt or condemnation. And then who's the crowd? Who am I just speaking the truth to?
That's really strong and powerful because it's one way to approach it. Like, hey, I want to be lost in the crowd. I want to hide in the crowd. I don't want to be up there. I don't want to be up there.
Yeah.
And when you want to get lost in the crowd, when you want to, you kind of, that leads to suppressing those feelings. That leads to, like, I don't want to stand out here. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be talking about it. And then relationship wise, sometimes this is a major misconception. It's sometimes an issue in relationships. Like, some guys feel that the women don't want them to be emotional or sensitive or to be too much about their feelings or talk too much. So they'll find different outlets or they'll go to different ways. Like, I'm a guy. I don't care about crying. I mean, B-Dog talks about that. I love it. He said that because I'm a crier, too. Like, I'll cry. I cry. There are sermons I cry. You made me cry, Pastor Kyle, a couple times.
That's your sermons. That's my goal.
Right? You know that. Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday, I'm watching your buddy Carl Lentz, and he's at Elevation Church. He made me cry, and I'm like, this is cool. I don't mind crying, and I'm fortunate enough to have, like, you appreciate that. But there are some women who may look at guys and be like, yeah, that's not manly enough, or you're not tough enough. So that can lead to problems where you start to suppress your feelings. You start to try to be this fake macho tough guy, and you're not talking about your feelings because now the person who's supposed to be closest to you is giving you a hard time about it. And now what? Now you find yourself in a situation where, hey, if I can't open up with my wife, and if she's looking down on me for being an emotional, sensitive guy who wants to talk about my feelings, now I'm going to just bottle them up. I'm going to hide them. And that can lead you to, like, where are you going to find your outlet? Yeah. You're going to go drink at the bar. Where are you going to find your outlet? It might lead you to making these decisions. Hey, she's neglecting my feelings. I'm going to seek
a
relationship.
You'll share them with somebody.
Right? You're going to share a relationship or seek a relationship. And sometimes it's not even – a lot of times I think men cheat. And not in a physical way, but they're cheating in an emotional way. And it might be a social media relationship.
I think almost
it might
every,
be that kind of thing.
I think almost that. Every, if, when you actually look at affairs, almost every affair is not sexual. Almost every affair doesn't start sexual. It starts emotional connection. Because what we're talking about is intimacy. Mm-hmm. Emotional intimacy always leads to physical intimacy. And so that's the process, buddy. And I would say this. I appreciate what you just said there on the flip side of that struggle. I would simply say this. Regardless, men and women need to find their identity and what identifies a man and what identifies a woman out of the Word of God, and then lead from that place.
Right.
And if a man is struggling with a wife that doesn't want him to be emotional in a healthy way, then he needs the lead, just like if it was the vice versa.
Yeah.
I just think it's we cannot take our cues from the people in our life to determine what health looks like. We have to take our cues from what the Word of God says, that what Jesus paid for and is established by the cross.
I think you need to determine what you're going to be emotional at. I mean, how many people are going to cry when a team wins the Super Bowl?
That's a good point.
I did.
So we'll cry over a sporting event,
right?
But you won't cry over, you know, something meaningful.
You really, though? Did you guys? But did you cry last year, guys? Like, tears of joy.
I'm just asking. I may talk from experience, like, a little bit, right?
It's emotional.
Yeah.
You know, did you?
But, Rob, you've challenged crowds before to where you'll come in and say, hey, Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles, and they'll go crazy.
Yeah.
And they'll cheer. And then you say, hey, but we're here to worship Jesus. And it's like, yay. Right? It's like, what do we pour our life into?
Yeah.
What do we pour our heart into? And when you see that you are loving and passionate about other things than Jesus, then that's concerning.
Yeah.
But we don't really look at it that way. But, Rob, you're bringing up this
subject. That's a good point.
You know, we talked before the show. I have five girls, five daughters now. My sister-in-law has three girls. So there's a lot of women.
So there's a lot of feelings
that,
up there.
There's
in
a
that
lot
house,
of feelings in there. But, you know, we're watching a movie the other night. Did you ever see the movie Wonder? It's with Owen Wilson, Julia Roberts, and the little child's going to school, and he has some difficulties from his face, how he's born, and just going through this. Mm. We get done the movie. All my girls are sitting around watching it. I'm in tears. I cried twice during that movie. They're just looking at me like, you all right, Dad?
But
I think it's
so
what tugs
trade in your man card, you'll hear, right?
There you go.
I
will
hate
say
that.
That
term.
I know.
It's such an annoying term.
But, you know, we unpack it, but it is important to unpack it because I think we go through social norms and what may be expected of you. But, hey, it's if you cry at the Eagles winning the Super Bowl or the Patriots winning, whatever your team is, you're like, hey, you have passion for that team. That's awesome.
Right.
That's
a great point, because fans get so emotional. Mm-hmm. You invest so much emotion into your team, and then you think that's fine, and it's fine if that's what you want to invest your emotions into. But how about investing those emotions into what your feelings, your relationships, your walk with the Lord?
Yeah.
That's where investing your relationship will reciprocate. Investing those feelings into a team and they win a championship for you one season and then they'll go 50 years without winning one and then you're angry and you're upset and you're constantly frustrated and constantly disappointed and you want the coach fired and you want the quarterback benched and you want the backup and you go through all these cycles, right? All these cycles and all of that time that you invested, how has it benefited you as a human being? How has it changed your relationships? How has it improved your life?
Yeah, I mean, look, where your treasure is, your heart will be, right? So that's why we get emotional in those moments that we've overinvested in. I think what we need to recognize is that when anything is used within its proper design, it produces increase in our life. When anything is used outside of its proper design, it brings decrease into our life. Money. Right. When we use money in its proper design, right, it buys food for our children that are hungry. It pays the rent. It it brings savings, gives us a vacation. Proper design. When we, you know, use it for drugs and gambling and all the things that it may not be designed for, it brings decrease into our life. Same way with emotion. When we use emotion for in its proper design, it helps to increase whatever relationship that we're in. When we use it for what it was not designed for, to bring glory to ourselves, relief to ourselves, trying to connect in a improper way, it brings decrease eventually into our life. So we always have to ask ourselves in those moments, is the way that I'm responding right now setting me up for increase or decrease? Is this relationship that I'm having, is this conversation that I'm having, is this engagement that I'm having, is it setting me up for increase or decrease?
Strong, powerful stuff. When we come back, we're going to hear from Brian Dawkins, who he is not afraid to share his feelings. He is not afraid to wear his heart on his sleeve. You're listening to Faith on the Field show presented by Karen University.
Karen University is a biblical university located in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, just 25 minutes from Center City, Philadelphia. With NCAA Division III athletics, a strong commitment to the arts, and majors in over 40 professional and academic fields, Karen prepares students to serve Christ as biblically minded, well-educated, and professionally competent men and women of character. Learn more at Karen.edu.
Welcome back to Faith on the Field show presented by Karen University. Rob Motti with Pastor Kyle, Doug, and Remy. If you missed any of our previous episodes, Doug will tell you how to catch up.
Yeah, absolutely. Go to www.faithonthefieldshow.com. All our episodes from season one and season two are there. Don't forget to check out Rob's blog that we send out each week. Sign up for our email list. And you could also still get Birds of Prey autographed copies. Just note in the notes section who you want it addressed to. And Rob, you'll send them. Send them out.
And we can no longer say defending Super Bowl champions.
Not anymore.
That's it. We were able to say defending Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles for 52 weeks. We can no longer say
it
defending Super Bowl
read,
champions.
Though.
You can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at Faith on the Field. Brian Dawkins was a second round pick out of Clemson by the Eagles in 1996. Man, makes me feel old. Makes me feel really old. He became a starter right away in his rookie season and ended up going to 9 Pro Bowls. And he was a 4-time All-Pro with the Eagles. And he finished his career off with the Denver Broncos. Last year, Dawk was enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton. I chatted with B. Dawk in Atlanta. Here is that interview brought to you by Heritages. Big welcome to the show, Hall of Famer Brian Dawkins. Dawk, I've spent my entire life in Philly, South Jersey, and we know fans there have a tough reputation, but I have never come across a player that is more universally beloved than you are. How did you win this fan base over, and what does it mean to you to be that guy that we look at and say, Brian Dawkins is up there as the one who's most loved?
I honestly believe it's just the way that I grew up, never really being the guy, so to speak. Like, I always had to, I had to work for everything. I had to outwork this dude because they said I was too small. I had to outwork this cat because they said he was more athletic. So it's always for me to always pushing through. And so that's my mentality, is to push through, is to grind. And so when I then got to Philadelphia, and then I don't make excuses for nobody. When it's my fault. And even if it wasn't my fault, I would take the blame upon myself. And so when people would really begin to see my heart, like even through my play, you can see my heart. You can see the passion that I play with. And because I love the game, I love the dudes that I play next to. And so I believe that same passion and drive and desire is bottled up and sometimes unleashed a little bit too much on game day by the fans, right? And so, like, for them seeing the way that I play the game, how much I love the game, I don't make excuses. I believe that they were able to, like, come side by side with me and became, like, part of my family. And so when they see me have success, they felt like they were having success.
Doc, it's been a year now since you went into the Hall of Fame, and a little bit over that, that you talked about the depression that you overcame, suicidal thoughts even. How has stepping out allowed you to impact other people's lives and really make a difference? How have you seen that?
So you will know this, you overcome by the power of your testimony.
Right.
And be speaking your testimony out. And when your testimony is then spoken out, it actually blesses other people. And so me being free and delivered from some of the things that I've gone through, now to be able to stand on this side from a place of stability, a place of peace, and a place of understanding, now I can now say, this is what I went through. This is actually what I was feeling. This is how I was feeling what I was feeling. This is what I was thinking about when I was feeling what I was feeling. But you don't have to stay there. You can come up out of that, and through my faith and through my walk with Christ, that's one of the main reasons. And so I try to give a lot of positivity. I try to give a lot of inspirational things. But the foundation of who I am is my relationship with Christ.
We have a misperception in this world of what a man should be.
Yes, we do.
You hear man up, and you think about being tough, being strong, being physical, and you embody all of those things. But being a godly man is different than the world's perception of what a real man is. What does being a godly man mean to you?
Man, a godly man to me is someone who's in touch with his emotions as well. That individual knows when it's an opportunity to cry and show emotion. A godly man cries and shows emotion. It's not I'm not ashamed to cry at a movie with my daughters and we're watching something and I cry. I'll be crying right next to him. Like, I'm not afraid of that. And so when you as a society has taught us as men that you know, suck it up. Pain, just weakness, get leaving the body. So all of those type of things, you can't survive keeping things inside. Our silence is killing us as men. We don't talk. We don't let things out. And so when we let things out, being able to either counseling or pastors or whatever the case may be able to talk about your issues. The issues actually become power. Amen. Going forward.
Doc, tell me about some of these items. You're here with Hunt Auctions. You have this autographed NFL football. You have a helmet over there. Just talk about what you guys have here and who the money's going to and all that.
So this is actually the ball that I scored the touchdown against the Texans when I did. You know, they call it the quadrifect.
This is the touchdown.
This is the touchdown catch. And so people always leave off the forced fumble. I actually had a forced fumble too on top of that. So you have all the real stats on this ball. So you'll be able to get auction. Bid on this one. And this is one of my helmets. This is one of the helmets that I actually had prepared for me. For my head, still had chin scrap on it, a little dirt on the, I don't know if you want to touch the dirt part, but you know, it's used. It's helmets that I have used. So both of these are game used, practice used, and you can bid on these things. And 100% of the proceeds will go to the Brian Dawkins Impact Foundation, where we're going to be blessing individuals with, spiritually, mentally, and physically, particularly single moms. And then also, you know, if you have a high school individual that needs a little boost, a little something here, we'll be able to provide them with some assistance. Even youth, to be able to talk to them on what I believe they need to do to see the world differently, to give them something outside of what they now see themselves through resources and education.
That is Pro Football Hall of Famer Brian Dawkins. Really appreciate your time spending a few minutes with us here on Radio Row. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. God bless.
And that was Brian Dawkins, brought to you by Heritages. Want to thank them for becoming our latest sponsor. It's a wonderful relationship. I've always enjoyed their chicken parm sandwich, Dougie.
They have great sandwiches. You know, that's where we get our milk from.
Is that right?
It's a dairy store in South Jersey. They have 33 stores. It's like a family-owned business. And,
awesome.
Check that out.
Yeah, they have great meats.
Dietz and Watson.
Yeah.
So the deli's a huge piece, and the milk is some of their signature products.
Outstanding. So we're very thankful, very grateful to partner up with Heritages. Brian Dawkins, guys, in that interview, man, he lays it all out there, and he did it before. A lot of us didn't know this about B. Dawk, what he was going through early in his career, and he laid it out in a couple interviews before he went into the Hall of Fame last year, talking about having to overcome a lot of the depression to the point where he had suicidal thoughts. And when you think of Brian Dawkins, as beloved as he, and we talked about it in the interview, as beloved as he is in Philadelphia, I don't know that there's ever been an athlete in Philly, definitely not in my lifetime or that I covered, that has been universally loved like Brian Dawkins. Chase Utley on the Phillies.
Absolutely.
And Brian Dawkins are the only two that I could say. And they're completely different
people. Yeah.
Different personalities. Chase is so reserved. Brian Dawkins is so emotional. And Chase was beloved for his hard work. The one thing they had in common, hard work, grit, hustle, determination.
Absolutely.
Go out. And Philly fans love that. But with B-Dawk, he was such a tough guy. Weapon X. We think of all that. You never think that maybe that there was something that he had to overcome, that he was going through anything like that. And I think it was incredible that he put it out there, that he laid it out there for people, because now that stigma of having depression or that stigma of having suicidal thoughts, when you have a guy, a Hall of Famer, but forget about the Hall of Fame. Forget about all that stuff. Just you have a guy who is Brian Dawkins. Like, you think of tough, you think of B-Dawk, and for him to talk about that, I know it touched people's lives. There are guys out there, there are men out there who heard that and like, hey, maybe if he can talk about it, if he can address it, and he can overcome it, there's a way out for me too. I can do this too. So I applaud him for doing that, for stepping out there, for being vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because that is, like, you're putting your feelings out there, being vulnerable. It's an incredible thing. The one quote in there where he says, silence is killing us as men. Well, that's the theme of our whole episode. Mm. Don't be afraid to be in your feelings.
Yep.
Don't be afraid to share. It's just an incredible thing, and I'm thankful and grateful that B-Dawk did that and that he came on the show.
Yeah, I mean, Rob, look, I think one of the things that we just have to get out and be able to speak about openly is that everyone struggles with depressive thoughts.
Yeah.
It's not a reflection of someone being a good person, a bad person, a holy person, an unholy person. It's just being a person. Humanity in and of itself struggles with the state that we're in. And so, you know, the lie continues to be, if I could just have something else, something more. And every time we get something, it doesn't fulfill us. So then we say it's the next thing, the next thing. The problem is when we're talking about someone at B-Dawk's level, or like we did last year with the Super Bowl champs, Philadelphia Eagles, they achieved what their highest dreams were. They have the money, they have the fame, they have the sports accomplishments, and yet it still hasn't fulfilled that.
Yeah.
And so now we're left with, oh my gosh, this must be the way I'm going to be for the rest of my life. And when darkness is not addressed with light, it stays dark. There's this amazing moment. So I'm really glad that B-Dawk said it. I am. I think the more that we talk about the reality that everyone struggles with depressive moments, and left unrestrained, those things become suicidal thought processes. It's just the way that our minds work. Because somewhere along the line, we'll say, well, I've accomplished everything that I could accomplish, and that didn't fulfill it. I guess this is just the best that life is, and I don't want to live this kind of life anymore. So death has to be better than life. It's just the natural product.
And it can attack anybody.
It attacks everyone.
It's not a matter of being tough or weak.
Everyone.
Man, woman, like, it can attack no matter where you are, high.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
High,
the
you are
whispers.
On a pedestal.
Yes, we have an enemy.
He just whispers all day
consistently,
long.
Consistently. Constantly.
Yeah.
And his ability or his willingness to be vulnerable like that, I think it's just so powerful. I've had people come to me when they hear me share my testimony, because I share something that could be embarrassing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What I speak about people could look down upon me, and they have.
Sure.
And there are people who do that.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
And there are people who come to me and say, like, why would you talk about this in public? Why do you go out there and put it out there? Like, that's in the past, leave it back. And I say, I know people are struggling with this. I know guys who are struggling with this, and I want them to use my story to take the mess that I made and created it into a message to benefit them, to help them. So B-Dawk did that with his thoughts of depression and potential like suicidal thoughts and the weakness and all that. And I do it when I share, when I talk about what I had to overcome. And I overcame being promiscuous and being unfaithful in relationships way back more than a decade ago, almost two decades ago now. Man, I'm really getting old. But it just shows maturity. It shows growth. But if you can help people, that's the other power in what Brian Dawkins is talking about. He's able to use his platform, as he says, when I share my testimony and it blesses other people. Yep. I feel that, hey, I can share the most embarrassing details of my life, but I want to bless other people.
Because they don't identify you, Rob, anymore. And that's where we come back to. If we believe that admitting that we have depressive thoughts or struggle with depression or whatever, struggle with addiction, whatever it may be, when we believe that those things identify us, we will always conceal those things because we don't want to lose value in someone else's eyes, because that's where we receive value in our own. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, we see only our value through the eyes of those who are looking at us. And so there's this great moment in Luke chapter 6 where Jesus walks into a synagogue. There's a man there with a withered hand. And he simply says this words, stretch forth your hand. Mm-hmm. He doesn't tell him which hand to stretch forth. He just says, stretch forth your hand. Right. In our world, we would put the withered hand behind our back and we would stretch forth the healthy hand because we don't want anyone to see that we're broken. It was actually in the revealing of his withered hand that it allowed God to do the work. And everyone there in that synagogue, everyone in the crowd received transformation because of that moment. Whatever we conceal, we will contain, and whatever we contain will remain. Mm-hmm. And so when we're trying to conceal something in our life, there's no chance for it to be transformed, and it will always remain. So that's why confession breaks the yoke. Jesus is very, very clear. There's just this moment where we just say, hey, this is what confession looks like. This is what real humanity looks like. Mm-hmm. Our world is dying because men and women of God refuse to be authentic.
Well, Brian said that.
True.
Right? He said,
so true.
I have freedom by sharing my testimony.
Absolutely.
It's not freedom from making the Hall of Fame or freedom from being a Pro Bowler or freedom from having this career. It's freedom from sharing my deepest struggles. Mm-hmm. And Rob, you've been open about your testimony. And if we all shared our stories, not everybody would be able to relate from a crowd that's
out
there.
Absolutely.
But some of the crowd would relate to Rob, maybe having a loss like we have in our family, Kyle, to what you struggled with as an athlete, and Remy, different things that you are open about. Yeah. So it's not meant to reach everyone.
Right.
But there may be one person in the crowd, and that may be okay. And so I think it's awesome that he just says, I have freedom by sharing my testimony because it can help others.
Yeah, in that point, that's where men also, you're helping yourself. Yeah. Like he finally had freedom, and he was coming out and talking about it. It's like a burden that's been lifted off him because he continued to suppress it, continue to hide it, continue not to talk about it. But now when you finally let go and you finally use it to bless other people, but you also release it, now you're willing to talk about it. And before he reached that point, of course, he went through stages of counseling and getting help. And that's the other area that I want to address, because a lot of times what we do as Christians is say, pray about it. Right? Mm. Go pray about it. Yeah. God's got your back. Go pray about it. You have Jesus, right?
Yeah.
So because you have Jesus, that doesn't mean you have the professional help to help you in your... Yes, Jesus is the answer. Jesus is the answer.
Yeah, yeah.
But you still need... Remy is was a professional, no longer working in the field, but you have the psychology degree, and you need to reach out to people like that. Yeah. You need to reach out to people who are in counseling. Mm-hmm. You made the point about choosing Christian counseling. Choose counseling. Mm-hmm. Choose someone who can help you. It's not wrong to get that help, but at the same time, don't let the church or don't let pastors or don't let people who tell you, it's going to be okay because you have Jesus.
Well, you can go to your pastor, too. You can go to your pastor.
Of course.
Because he would definitely have the wisdom, the godly wisdom that would get you out of your feelings. But obviously, choose wisely whatever you think you're comfortable with. And if you feel that, no, I need to go to a counselor and I need to sit down with someone that's professional to help me out, please do that, because that is very, very important. And these people would know exactly what to do and what to say to get you out of those feelings as much as possible. But I think you have to make the decision first. It comes from you first. You have to make the decision to get out of those feelings and take a hold of them and say, I do not belong in these feelings. I belong in what God says. Who I am. My identity is in Christ, and that is my root. and from there, act accordingly.
Well, that's good advice for people, too, that maybe have a husband or a wife that is struggling with those things, and you're like, I can't get them out of it.
Yeah.
And it's not your job to get them out of it, but you need to continue to speak truth into their life, to continue to pray for them, to continue to be patient as they struggle until they're ready to seek help.
Right.
We have to remove the stigma of mental health issues.
Yes.
In our society and in Christian culture as well, that's still a stigma that's carried on. When I'm sick, I go to the doctor, and no one thinks I'm strange for going to the doctor.
Right.
Right.
But when I have a emotional sickness in my life, it's somehow less than weak, broken. The stigmas are wrong. We need to be, look, you know, Jesus says, my worshipers worship me in spirit and in truth. Mm-hmm. We have to recognize that we are spirit beings, we are physical beings, we are emotional beings, and all of those, because of the fall, are broken. Mm-hmm. So we need help in every one of those areas. Look, you can read the Bible, you know, Rob, it's true, but you need a pastor in your life, right? Because we all need to read the Bible, right? That's awesome. Mm-hmm. But we need someone to be able to pastor us and shepherd us. We need spiritual guidance. I can look on WebMD. Doug and I, we studied medicine, right? It's great.
But scary.
And by the way, stay away from WebMD. But I've been diagnosed
with every, I died six times on WebMD.
Self-diagnosed.
But when you do it, like when you're sick, you go to the doctor, right? But when we have emotional brokenness, somehow, some way, we don't actually recognize the fact that we would rather stay in the brokenness that brings pain into our life and pain into others' lives than to actually take the risk of wearing some stigma that someone else may think about us. Again, it gets back to my identity. I cannot see myself in my own eyes through the eyes of other people around me. Well, I must see myself in my own eyes only through God's eyes.
You have to understand, too, that a lot of physical issues, the obesity epidemic that plagues a lot of adolescents, is more of a psychological issue. Mm-hmm. Eating disorders that has a peak age onset of 16 years old. When you're talking about high school kids that have eating disorder and disordered eating.
Stress is the number one cause of sickness in our
come from a psychosocial aspect where it's more mental than it is a behavior that we're doing.
Absolutely.
And it manifests itself in a lot of different ways.
It's all in your head.
Let's be honest. Almost all addictions are the result of self-soothing.
Yeah.
You know, they become addictive later on physically, right? Most addictions have physical release, whether it's chemical through drugs or chemical in your body, pornography. All those things create chemical releases in us that cause addiction. But the root of almost every addiction, at least in my opinion, is self-soothing. We are trying to self-soothe ourselves from some sort of emotional brokenness that's in our life. And so that's what we turn to. When I'm unhappy, I eat. When I'm really happy, I eat.
Yeah.
When I'm depressed, I eat.
When I'm stressed.
When I'm stressed, all those things. So it gets down to what is that? It's a result of we're trying to do what Remy just said. We're trying to self-diagnose ourselves and self-prescribe.
I think that's one thing, too. Pray for our coaches. Pray for our teachers that are taking care of these young people, that they can speak into their lives and what a platform they have to be able to affect people as they grow and they mature and they struggle with these issues as teenagers, right? I mean, keep those people in prayer. They're on the front lines.
I had this struggle last week when I was at the Super Bowl, and one of my struggles was being around people, and sometimes like being around a lot of people who don't know how far along I've come or where I am now.
Do they want to bring you back?
And it's not like trying to bring you back, but it's like I felt uncomfortable in conversations.
Yes.
I felt uncomfortable with people asking me, what was Sarah Michelle Gellar like up close?
Yeah.
What was, you know, things like that where I'm like, oh, I have no opinion. You guys have heard me say that before. I have no opinion on women. It has nothing to do with my wife.
Right. It
has nothing to do with anything she's ever said to me. In fact, it gets on your nerves when I never say like, oh, yeah, this person's attractive and that person's attractive. You know, but I struggled with stuff like that last week and finding myself in awkward positions with people who are having the conversations and having the discussions, and I'm there and I'm in the middle of it and I can't go anywhere and I have to hear it. It's a struggle. It's difficult. And then there's the parties and all of the parties. And fortunately for me, I was so busy. I had so much work. Like, I couldn't go to Shaq's party. I couldn't go to anybody's. But there was all these party invitations. Like, the only thing I went to was the NFL Legacy Reception, the Man of the Year, which is like an incredible thing.
Yeah.
And it was like an invitation only. So and then I went to some of the NFL Legends Lounge, and I saw that. So I was working on a story, but I chose in the moments that I had a little bit of free time to go and be around guys that I know would either uplift me, encourage me, or inspire me, and that we can have dialogue and conversations that wouldn't bring me back to who I was 10, 15 years ago.
That's really
so whereas awesome. The first Super Bowl I ever went to, all I cared about was going to the Maxim party, and I did go to the Maxim party, and it was a good time 18 years ago or whenever it was that the Eagles went to. Don't make faces
thank
over there.
Thank Jesus that he delivered you from all that. Thank you, Lord.
You're not encouraging people to go to the Maxim party.
I don't even know if they have it anymore.
They shouldn't.
But actually, and there was another invitation that I turned down to go to that party that year too. So I did draw the line there. But now I'm like, all right, I want to go to the gospel worship, or I want to go to the there was like a men's conference type thing. I couldn't get to it because I was late. But it's choices that we make and who we surround ourselves with, and it's having the willingness to be able to say, hey, I had issues and areas where I needed help with.
Yes.
And because I'm no longer that person, I can speak on it. I can talk about it. I'm not embarrassed or ashamed of who I was. And I want to use it to bless other people. But at the same time, I want to stay true to who I am now. So I'm going to avoid circumstances or conversations or discussions that could pollute my mind or compromise my integrity.
Yeah, you know, the Word of God says, you know, don't move the boundary stones. And Rob, you've created good, healthy boundaries in your life because of things that you have struggled with. And it's okay. We all struggle with different things. That's why we need those boundary stones there in our life. You know, it's interesting. I've been going to the hospital to see one of our people who had a tragic accident. And I never use more Purell in my life than when I'm in the hospital, right? Being like when I'm at home, I don't go around every time I leave the room screwing my head. But like you get off the elevator, you do the Purell. You go in because you recognize that you're around the sickness in there. So you want to make sure that you keep that cleanliness. And I think that that's an okay thing. Mm-hmm. I don't stop going to the hospital because I'm not getting in the bed with that person, right? You know what I mean? You know what I mean by that. Yeah. That sounded weird. You know what I mean? I'm not getting in the hospital bed with anybody.
The sick person.
The sick person. I'm not getting in the sick person's bed. I'm going there to invest. I'm going there to go. But I recognize that there's sickness that's there. So I need to make sure that I keep myself from engaging in that. And I think that's where what you did this week in Atlanta is important. We have to put ourselves in a position where we're willing to invest in people's lives who are still broken. But we have to make sure that when we're around that, we keep the Purell handy.
Right. I love that, Pastor Kyle. Awesome stuff. Awesome stuff. When we come back, we're going to wrap it up. You're listening to Faith on the Field Show, presented by Cairn University.
Since 1930, the Heritage family has proudly served the communities of South Jersey. From humble roots, Heritage's Dairy Stores now operates 33 convenient locations. Their desire is to become your convenience store of choice, not just because of their welcoming atmosphere, but because of their fresh, quality products. Heritage's milk is still the sweetest, coffee's hot and fresh, and Heritage's full-service delis offer the best local ingredients prepared and sliced on-site, far exceeding the competition. Heritage's Dairy Stores. It's not just our name, it's our heritage.
Welcome back to Faith on the Field Show, presented by Cairn University. Rob Motti, Pastor Kyle, Doug, and Remy. We went so long and had such good stuff in the two previous segments. We don't have time for Faith in the Field this week, but we'll do it again next week. I want to thank everyone for watching and listening. Big thanks to our guest today, Brian Dawkins. Huge thank you to Pastor Scott Foreman for all of his excellent work on our website, podcast, blog, and all that he does to make us present better. Thanks to our newest sponsor, Heritage's. Thank you to our wives, Danielle and Chris. Remy's already here. Thank you to Brett Kronberger for producing the show. And a big thanks to 610 ESPN Philly, 107.5 Alive, the Joy FM Sports for airing Faith on the Field, presented by Karen University. For Kyle, Doug, and Remy, I'm Rob Motti, reminding you, make a difference. Be a blessing.